Welcome to episode 80 of the Historic Performance Podcast, featuring Joshua Bonatol, Director of Performance for Men's Basketball and Diving at Purdue University. I want to apologize for the infrequent uploads during the last couple weeks. Prior to that, there was the holiday period, and then after that, there's been some personal issues going on in my life. But now that that's getting resolved, the uploads are going to be back to normal, so it's going to be every single Wednesday. In today's podcast, I talked to Joshua Bonatol. Joshua, I reached out to him a couple weeks ago after I read an article that was published in the Wall Street Journal last year during March Madness by Rachel Bachman, which highlighted Purdue University and Joshua's work there. And I thought it was fairly interesting. Ended up checking out his Twitter and his Instagram, saw some interesting things. And after that, connected with Joshua, and he sent me an article that he had written for Leaders. And that article really focused on the art of coaching and the art of relationship building, which is two things that he's really big into. As you'll learn in the podcast, his main thing is creating a player-led culture in whatever organization he finds himself in. So the main content of the podcast really focuses on athlete interaction, the importance of language, how to create a good coaching rapport with college basketball players, some of the challenges that he encountered switching from the NBA to the college level. But he also gets into the nuts and bolts of his thoughts on terms of programming, conditioning, and linear speed development for basketball. So overall, it's a good podcast in the sense that it really highlights many different areas that challenge us as coaches. So with all that being said, let's get started. Welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Today, I'm happy to be joined by Joshua Bonatol. Joshua, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Joshua. I mean, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I know you're currently in season.
Yeah.
So to start us off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're currently at, and how you ended up getting there?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently I am in my sixth season as the Director of Sports Performance for the men's basketball program at Purdue University. Within my current role, I actually am also the Director of Sports Performance for our diving program as well. So a bit of a diverse group that I work with, but on the diving side, we actually have a few Olympic caliber divers and two of which who actually both medaled the Olympics in Rio. So really kind of a exciting and unique experience here. But my primary background has really been in basketball. Prior to coming to Purdue, I spent four seasons with the Chicago Bulls, where I was the assistant strength coach there. And really, I got that opportunity pretty much right out of my undergrad, which was at the University of Wisconsin. You know, what's kind of led me along this path has really been kind of a series of different internships. And, you know, it's kind of your case of, like most people, it's just one thing leading to the next. Spent some time in there where I worked for Mike Boyle for just under a year out of college, and did a little bit of time traveling. Actually spent a few weeks out at Australian Institute of Sport out of college. Really tried to, you know, throughout my career have tried to visit and expose myself to as many different coaches and as many different places as possible. And it's, I think, through forming those relationships and those connections that led me to get to where I am today.
Joshua, at the tail end of this podcast, I want to get back to some of the internships that you did and how you ended up at the Chicago Bulls. So to go back to that, but the main focus for this podcast is I know that you wrote an article really highlighting a player-led approach when it comes to the weight room. And how to go about establishing relationships and different ways of leadership. And I was hoping that we could really cover that.
Okay.
Perhaps how has your thought process evolved throughout your years in terms of how to interact with athletes?
You know, it's something for me, I think, has really come full circle, really kind of starting my professional career in the NBA. One of the things that you learn at that level is just the importance of really building relationships with your athlete. When I was working for, you know, so I had several players who are in their mid to late 30s, have, you know, 3-4 kids at home and have already had very successful careers. So here I am, this 24-year-old kid, not too far removed from college. And I'm going to come in and tell this grown man what to do, you know. And so you learn very soon that having a dictator type or authoritarian type of personality or coaching style just doesn't work at that level. So, you know, spending 4 years in the NBA really allowed me to kind of fine tune my approach and understand, you know, how to adapt your communication style, your approach, and things like that to each individual athlete, you know, and understanding that it's much more effective. I am able to do that rather than just bringing the same exact approach to everybody. I think they're able to optimize the work and in turn the results you get from each athlete because you get more buy-in, and with more buy-in comes more intent with their work. But really what you're doing is you're forming partnerships with these guys, is you're giving them a voice rather than just strictly telling them what to do. You're asking for their input. You're asking how they feel, and you're asking what's worked for them in the past, you know, to come up with the best plan or the best strategies to help them. Now, when I came to college, you know, initially I came in very much with that same approach, you know, was building relationships with each of my guys and really giving them a voice and doing some of these things. Well, at the college level in America, a lot of times I felt as though I was seen at times maybe as a bit of an outcast in terms of my coaching style, because at the college level, a lot of times you're sort of expected to just dictate to the athletes what you're doing. So I almost felt a little pressure there for about a year or two, or even started to second guess myself of like, okay, maybe I do need to change. And so for about a year there, I did a bit, and I just felt like it was very ineffective. You know, I was starting to not really enjoy coaching anymore. I didn't feel like I was getting the most out of my athletes. And so, you know, I kind of decided I'm going to go back to doing it the way that I believe is the most effective and the way that sort of suits my personality style, but ultimately I think gets the most out of our athletes. I think as I have that becomes something that just the more time that you're together with each individual athlete, I think the more autonomy you can give them, because you're taking the time, again, to build that relationship, to build that trust, but maybe most importantly, to educate them on training, why we're doing what we're doing, you know, and how it will help them, and then giving them choice in the process. So really excited kind of where we're at with that right now, you know, and it's something, it's ongoing. It never really stops. It's constant communication, discussion, and reinforcement with the athletes.
Joshua, I know you just mentioned that at least at the onset, when you came over to the college level, you felt almost a bit of an outcast. Did that feeling come from? Was it just the way that you saw other coaches interact with players? What was causing that feeling?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look around and both strength coaches, sport coaches, you know, a lot of, I think what you see at the college level is everything is much more just dictated for the player. And I do think that has started to evolve even at the college level over the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. But when I first started out, you know, it was like everything around me and anyone else that I talked to, that was the impression that kind of I got. And the thing that, you know, because a lot of times people would always ask me, you know, what's the biggest difference between the NBA and college and dealing with those athletes? And really, in college, I think oftentimes it is the control that you have, because you do have the ability to dictate their schedule more or less. Whereas at the NBA level, and especially in the offseason or at the college level, you do have the ability to basically say, hey, you have to do this because I said so. That doesn't work very well at the NBA level. The most that you can do would be in season is potentially fining them for something that they don't want to do. But it would be the equivalent of if I asked you, James, to work out or you know, do a conditioning workout, whatever it is, and you said, Josh, I'm not doing it. I don't feel like doing it. I say, okay, well, you got to give me, you know, $10 or $20. If you really didn't want to do it, you wouldn't miss that $10 or $20 too much. And that's very much what it is at the NBA level. I think what I see at times is coaches maybe take that bit of control too far, as worried about building a relationship or explaining why to the athlete, you know, and involving the athlete because maybe they don't feel they need to, maybe they feel insecure. You know, I think a lot of times it's an ego thing, you know, it's not wanting to be exposed. It's give up this little bit of control. What if they, you know, take advantage of me? And it's not, you know, I think the approach that I've tried to take, don't get me wrong, I'm not just sitting back and letting these guys do whatever the heck they want. There is a balance there. You know, you do need to step in at times and put your foot down and raise your voice and say, hey, these, you're not meeting the standards. This isn't good enough. And also a lot of that autonomy, I think, is really earned over time. But at the same time, you know, there's going to be some times where maybe I'll forego or lose a battle in order to kind of win the war, so to speak. So maybe there's a day where a guy just really doesn't want to train that day or just really doesn't have it. If that's something that's kind of out of character for him, I'm probably going to let him have that day, you know, because the one thing is, when you get into this, you know, and I think at any level, but especially at a high level, you have to learn very quickly that none of it's personal. You know, so if a player frustrated and maybe lashes out at me, or, you know, I'm getting on the guy and he's lashing out, oftentimes there's something else going on that created him to act that way. You know, you got to look at sort of pattern of behavior. Kind of my whole mentality is seek first to understand what's going on with them and work with them. And I think out of that, oftentimes, even if, you know, I maybe give them that one day here or there, what I get in return is so much greater in terms of how hard they're willing to work and their attitude. And what you find more often than not is after that, they come back the next day and they're like, Josh, man, that's my bad. You know, I was, you know, I had this or that going on. I know I lashed, like, I'm sorry. You know, I'm gonna make it up and whatever. So, but I think that's just, you know, the balance of kind of relationships in general is there's a give and take there.
Joshua, part of that player-led culture, I know you have talked about in the article that you wrote, the importance of language and the fact that language mm-hmm. has to have a personal meaning to the players themselves, whether it be a keyword or phrase. So what are some of the key words or phrases that you use with Purdue basketball, and how did those phrases come about? And the reason I'm asking this is because it will be important for other strength coaches to hear how it came about, simply because it's not one key word that's used for one organization may mean nothing for another organization. So ultimately, just finding key words that work for your player specifically.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think a lot of how we've tried to approach that, I stole a ton from, and I steal all the time from anybody and everywhere that I can, but I stole a lot from James Kerr's book, Legacy, which, you know, I think a lot of coaches have been reading recently. But there's a lot of very good lessons in that book. And one of them is on language. And, you know, I think for your players to really be successful and come together as a team and especially to form more of that player-led culture and accountability and that sort of thing, is they need to define that culture. And I think as coaches, we can guide them in that process. You know, we can talk to them about the importance of language. But ultimately, any word or any mantra or anything that they want to be defined by is they have to get together as a group and come up with what that is and come up with maybe a story behind it. Or again, there has to be a personal meaning there, because when we say a mantra or we say a word or a phrase or whatever, the whole point of that is to, you know, maybe spy at a point where I'm wanting to give in on a workout or in a game or whatever, bring myself back to that moment and find a way to still push through to create that vision of, you know, what all the work is. Us, the kind of two words that stand for us that I came up with, finish. So the first one, finish, for us has a lot of meaning. And it's something that our guys really spend a lot of time talking about. And it's something where every time at the end of any workout or practice or game or whatever it is, when they come together in the hub and you know, break it down, they say finish on three. And what finish signifies for our guys is it brings us back to a failure that occurred for us this past season, where we were in our NCAA tournament playing a lower seeded opponent. So we were highly favored in that game. We were up by, I think it was 14 points with about 3 minutes left in the game. We kind of unfolded and the other team came back. They pushed us to overtime and they ended up winning that game. So we did not finish that game. We did not do things that we needed to do to finish and hold that long to the next round. So it ended our season. So it's one, it's a reminder of that, you know. So at any point individually or as a team, you know, guys get frustrated, they don't want to give in, finish with us of that and that feeling in the locker room, you know, how bad everyone hurt. The name finish also signifies that we want to finish every rep, every that every, you know, drill, every possession, every workout, every game. To use a basketball analogy, the shot clock is 30 seconds. We can't defend for 30 seconds, force the other team to take a bad shot, and not box out our man and go get the ball. We have to finish that play out and go get the rebound. So for our guys, when they say finish, it brings all these things back. So the second word that our guys came up with is really something that we stole from a coach who came and spoke with us. We'll have several different speakers throughout the year. And one of them that we had is a guy named Kevin Eastman. And Kevin Eastman was an assistant coach on the Boston Celtics team that won the NBA championship with Kevin Garnett and that group. And most recently, he was with the Los Angeles Clippers with, you know, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, those guys. But he's a guy who in the offseason has worked with some of the best players in the NBA, one of them being Kobe Bryant. And so Coach Eastman shared with us this story of he was working in elite high school basketball camp with Kobe. And so one of the things that they were doing was they were sitting with some of these high school players and teaching them about, you know, how to watch film to prepare and as part of their game. And so he's going through different clips and all of a sudden he gets to this clip and Kobe just looks at him and says, "Hey, Kev, rewind that. I want to see that again." So he rewinds the clip, plays it again. Same thing. Kobe asks him to play it over. So this goes on about four or five times. And so Coach Eastman says, "Hey, Kobe, let's stop there. What are you looking at right now? What are you see?" And Kobe said, he was like, "Well, that move that kid is doing there is, that's a really good move. That's something that I've not really seen before, but that's something I can add to my game." And Coach Eastman looks and he's like, "Kobe, that's a high school kid. You know, what are you, you're taking something from a high school kid?" He's like, "Yeah, absolutely. I look for anything I can from anywhere." So he says, okay, well, now how do you add this move to your game? And so Kobe talks about how, well, first, you know, he goes in the living room and he works on the footwork for a while, and he just says he just does it until. So they move along, and well, then I get on the court and I work on, from that spot of the court, the different footwork, the steps, and just go over and over. So Coach Eastman says, okay, so, you know, how many shots or whatever? He says, oh, no ball. He's like, just working the footwork. He said, okay, how many reps? And Kobe just looks at him. He's, I just threw it until. And he was like, until what? Like, how long? Kobe said, until. And Coach Eastman kind of asked him one more time. And he said, Kobe just gave him this death stare. And he was like, I do it until I get it right, until I feel confident. And that was something that our players kind of took. That's our motto of, you know, how we need to work, rather than we're just going to go out and work for 30 minutes, or, you know, we're going to shoot 10 shots from this spot or whatever it is. We're going to do it until we get it right. We're going to do it, you know, so having that mentality. And that was something we even tried to work into, like, some of our different conditioning workouts. We would do some different things. One of them being, we'll run a hill that we have here. It's a pretty tough workout. But rather than putting a number on it, what we did was we said, okay, everybody's going to run until the last guy gets 10. So, you know, we have a bigger guy. He's 7'2", 300-pound guy. And, you know, so he's nowhere near as fast as, like, some of our guards and stuff like that. So it became something where our guards are competing to get as many reps as they possibly can, but then our big man is competing to not let them have to do that extra work. And so it was a little bit for those guys as well, kind of sending that message too, of, especially for our big guy, hey, look, no matter how bad you're hurting, these guys around you are depending on you. But I think it's, you know, it's just that type of language, where there's a story behind it, or there's a meaning for the players. Because if it's something that we as coaches just come up with, and maybe it sounds good to us, but maybe it doesn't mean anything to our players. You know, they come together, they stack it up, they say a mantra. But if it doesn't mean anything, then what's the point?
Joshua, I'm going to take a quick break so that we can get a message from the sponsors of this podcast episode, which is SkinTech. But in part two, when we come back, Joshua is going to be talking about his thoughts on conditioning for basketball, why he feels that linear speed development and top-end speed is vital for basketball players. And finally, after that, some of his recommended books and how he suggests that young coaches go about searching for internship. And now a word from our sponsor. Before we get back to part two, I want to thank SkinTech for sponsoring this podcast episode. SkinTech are the creators of the first all-inclusive protective strength training shirt called the Apollo SS. The Apollo SS is currently being used by professional athletes in the NHL, NFL, MLS, and Team USA. It features 6.35 millimeters of XRD Extreme Impact Foam and antimicrobial moisture-wicking fabric. The best part is that it's designed and made in the United States. For more information, check them out at skintechfit.com. As an added bonus, all listeners have access to an exclusive promotional code HP20 to get 20% off your next order. So check it out, either for yourself or for your athlete. And now back to part two of this podcast episode with Joshua Bonital.
Exactly, and I really like how you ended up tying in a little bit about the player-led culture and then how it ties in with what you do in the weight room and in terms of conditioning as well, which is actually a good segue into my next question, which is actually thoughts on conditioning for basketball, because I know that you highlighted a little bit about this in a Q&A that you did and also in the podcast with Mike Robertson. I just wanted to expand upon that a little bit. I know in certain sports, sometimes when it comes to conditioning, it comes from a conversation that you have with the coaching staff and have an understanding of what the coaching staff expects from certain positional players and what the tactical system is going to be. Do you think that is something that needs to be kept in mind when you do conditioning? And what are your overall thoughts in terms of conditioning for basketball? What is your approach?
Yeah, absolutely. So, You know, I think obviously there are really a multitude of factors to keep in mind. And, you know, the biggest one is obviously who's the head coach that, that you work for and what is their playing style? Is it a very aggressive attacking, you know, in our case, it would be pressing, high tempo type style, or is it more of a slower, you know, grind you out type of style, things like that. And then again, I think you hit the nail on the head is breaking it down, not only to position, but body type and player type and, you know, what is going to make each individual guy successful. To me, I think where, at least in basketball, oftentimes think coaches make mistakes is they use the off season and they approach the off season looking to build conditioning through the off season. And really, I think that's a bit misguided in terms of optimizing what we want to get out of our athletes and their development. To me, I look at the off season as our time to really develop capacities. And those capacities are going to be specific to each individual athlete and where they're at within their training and what they need. You know, so some of our younger athletes or maybe even more of a less fit athlete or overweight athlete, really, we're probably just trying to build their general capacities, you know, work capacity, general movement qualities, movement competency, general fitness, that sort of stuff. But our older and more developed, more experienced athletes, we're probably trying to build things like maximum strength and maximum power and speed qualities. As it relates to conditioning, you know, within our sport, being a court sport and being able to get up and down the court, you know, I think, and I say it all the time, one of the biggest things that changes each level you go up in basketball, and I think it's very much the same way in other sports, is as you go from high school to college and college to the NBA, the biggest thing that changes is the speed of the game. So to me, in the offseason, we need to use that time to increase our players' speed, to increase their power, to increase their strength, but build these absolute capacities. And then as we go into the preseason, now let's attack the repeatability of these qualities. So, you know, typically when you look at conditioning, people use terms like repeat sprintability and that sort of thing. Well, a lot of times I think coaches make the mistake of trying to attack and build repeat sprintability throughout the offseason when they've never really built the capacity for their athletes to actually raise their top end speed. I think if we raise your top end speed first, what we're then doing is making the athlete more efficient. So most of what they're going to do on the court is going to be at a submax percentage of whatever their top speed is. So now their 70% or their 80% is faster. And in turn, the same speed maybe they were running before requires less energy because their top speed is now faster. They have more of a reserve there. But I think if you're doing it the opposite way, you're really just repeating their ability to maybe run slow efforts. You know, if they're slow and you haven't built their speed, you're just repeating slow efforts. And so I think that's where that mistake comes in. And so from a conditioning standpoint throughout the offseason, we will do some general type conditioning workouts, but it's more aimed at building our base, building some work capacity, and just again general fitness qualities, but really training them to be able to train harder, training to train. So things like tempo runs and very basic things, where we get into our specific conditioning where it's higher intensity and maybe mimics some different things that we'll do out on the court, different movements and changing ends, is as we go into the preseason. And that's kind of our overall approach is, you know, again, throughout the offseason, we're going general to specific, but also with each individual athlete and looking at, as we build them developmentally, we're looking at going really general to specific.
So as you mentioned, there's a bunch of criteria that kind of goes into how you go about figuring out what is the optimal program for that specific player at that specific time. One thing that you mentioned was improving top end speed. So how do you go about assessing what each individual player's top end speed is?
Sure. You know, for us, I think basketball is probably very different in that we're very much confined by a relatively small space, especially when you compare it to other sports, you know, soccer or football over in Europe and American football. Here, where you have a very large field, a very large space to accelerate and get into higher speeds. For us in basketball, we'll kind of look at a 20-meter sprint as sort of our gold standard for how fast is this guy. And then what I'll do is, using, you know, some of my experience from working with the Bulls, working at the NBA level, it gives me an idea of whether it be a point guard or a big man or whoever it is, where are they in relation to your stereotypical point guard? Are they, is their speed average, above average, below average? And really kind of attack from there. I think for us, probably the best thing that we do in terms of speed development is we really make it our emphasis. And so, you know, we obviously get into emphasizing technique and technical mechanics and those sorts of things. But the biggest thing we do is we just try to expose them to running fast as much as possible. And so I think we end up sprinting these guys more than most any basketball program or more than what you might typically see with a basketball player. I think with basketball players, because they're confined by that space, oftentimes they don't really reach those higher speeds. They don't, you know, they don't accelerate over a big enough distance. So again, what we try and do then in terms of with each athlete and building their speed is, you know, we do want to know where they're starting from with a 20-meter sprint, but then we're going to adapt it to each individual and where they're at within their training and development at that point. And we're going to try to build speed and then lengthen it. So with a more developmental, younger athlete, we're focusing probably more so on starts, initial accelerations, technical mechanics. You know, we'll do some efforts beyond, but most of our work may be initially just 0 to 10 meters. With our guys that have now been in the program for a few years, we're going to start to stretch them out to 20 meters and maybe even 30 meters. For us, we probably really don't get beyond 30 meters because 30 meters is further than they'll ever accelerate in the course of a game. So I think it is, it's taking them a bit above. Maybe you're touching into, I wouldn't call it like worst case scenario, but any speed that they hit within a game is probably going to be less than what they're able to hit in that 30-meter acceleration. And then I think the thing that we've then done now, because we have some older guys who now we've really built up these qualities over the last 3 or 4 years, is now we've got it into some more specific speed qualities. So now we're doing, you know, some angular accelerations, or now we're doing some high velocity change of direction and things like that. But I think it was important for us to focus first on just put all of our efforts towards getting faster straight ahead. Because as basketball players, I just think they don't sprint enough, nearly enough. They don't really get that opportunity to touch into those higher ends. And again, the more time our athletes are in the program is where, you know, say for our perimeter players, now we're able to start to work maybe more specific routes or cuts that they may make within our offense. And with our bigs, maybe we're doing something that's a little more specific to them. But initially, it's very much general.
Joshua, to go back to kind of the initial point of this podcast where we were talking about kind of player-led culture, having worked with athletes in soccer specifically, I know that sometimes there's questions that are involved, and you actually like questions. You like when players question you, when they challenge you. I have to imagine that at least some point in your career, when it has come to these sprinting protocols, one player has come up to you and been like, "Coach, how the hell does this make me a better basketball player? Because this this doesn't happen when I play. Like, how have you gone about explaining that process to the players so that they know that this is helping them improve their game and be a better basketball player?
You know, I think that's the biggest thing, and is you hit on it, is making that connection for them between training and how it impacts their performance. And so that is one of the biggest reasons why I encourage questions, because I think a lot of times we need to understand that our players, our athletes, don't have the same background, experience, and knowledge that we do. I think a lot of times as coaches, and I know I'm guilty of it all the time, is you start to think that person thinks like you or knows what you do. So you just assume that they should understand why we're doing this and how it will help them. But you have to put yourself in their shoes. So that's where I think the questions are important. Where I probably have had throughout my career more of those type of issues of being able to connect with our athletes is more so in the weight room. You know, maybe we're doing squats or Olympic lifts or whatever it is, being able to connect those things. For our guys, I think they see that connection of the speed work right away, because it's something, while they may not run those same distances, it's something that really can be a game changer for them. You know, if you give a guy another gear in the open court, it completely changes his game. You know, we've had several players go from really being more pure shooters, very perimeter oriented guys in terms of they just sort of stay out on the wing. So all of a sudden, after an off season of training and building their speed, now they're really getting up and down the floor, they're attacking the rim, they're, you know, finishing in transition and things like that. So I think it's important to highlight when you see those improvements occur on the court. I think it's important to ask them if they're noticing any of those improvements on the court, because I think a lot of times just that anecdotal may be even more powerful than any data that we can present them. If you can get them to connect that link of being like, man, I feel really fast out on the court, and you can connect that, well, yeah, like, you're getting a whole lot faster when we bring the timing gates out, and it just looks like it's when I watch you, it looks like it's coming a lot easier. You know, it looks like you're not having to work as hard to manufacture that speed. So I think you start to make a lot of those connections, and especially with the speed work, you know, any type of sprinting, vertical jump, you know, any really athletic type stuff, I think you tap into their competitive nature to get them to compete with themselves, but also to get them to compete with their teammates, and get them excited about it. And I think that's where the technology has really helped us, because before we had electronic timing gates, any of our speed work was, in my opinion, really poor. But I could understand why, because I'm asking them to run whatever distance, but I'm not giving them feedback. And even if, you know, maybe I could with a stopwatch, but it's just not as meaningful as that laser time. You know, and what I've found is the speed work in particular has actually gotten our players to buy into other aspects of training, because we've had several players, especially some of our guards, who have needed to put on weight in order to improve their game and become more physical. And something that I'll tell them early on is, look, we're going to add, you know, 10, 15, 20 pounds to you, but I think we can still get you faster. And then we turn around and do that, and we can show that with the times they're running on the gate, where now in a 20-meter sprint, they're running a tenth or two-tenths of a second faster, and they're 10 pounds heavier. I've had guys who have been able to make improvements like that, and I come back to them and say, look at how much you've improved, and yet you've been fighting the program the whole way. Just imagine if you kind of just trust the process and give yourself to it. And now at this point, being year six and having several of those success stories to point to, it really just takes care of itself, where when our freshmen come in, our older guys, our juniors and seniors, will nip that in the butt right away, because they say if a guy starts kind of questioning or wondering how it's going to help them, we'll have a lot of our older guys that step in and say, hey, look, if you just do whatever, you know, Josh and those guys ask you to do, you're going to get better. You're going to get faster. And they'll give a story of how they were as a freshman to how they are now and how that improved speed and vertical jump and whatever has made them a better basketball player. So at this point, it's really cool because it just sort of takes care of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I was exactly thinking that. I was about to say, since you've been there for a couple of years now and have had those success stories, that it definitely helps when you have that doubtful freshman coming in who maybe hasn't been exposed to SNC at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Josh, the way I typically like to end the tail portion of the podcast is really to give back to younger strength coaches who are just graduated from undergrad or are in the process of starting off their career. So I know that you mentioned Legacy, which looks at the All Blacks and looks at some key scenarios in terms of leadership. But were there any other books that you read last year in 2016 that were particularly impactful for you?
Yeah, another one, in that article I wrote, I referenced this book quite a bit as well, is Extreme Ownership. And that's Jocko Willink and Lee Babin. And that was one that really had a lot of good take-home points. But looking at leadership as a coach or at any level, I thought it had a lot of really good takeaways. But the biggest one being just, you take ultimate ownership for anything that goes wrong, you know, whether it be above or below you, you know. So if somebody messes something up, first look at yourself, you know, what could I have done better to maybe communicate more effectively to that person what I wanted out of that? Or maybe I put someone in a position that they weren't quite ready for. Maybe if it's someone above me, you know, I didn't give them a critical piece of information that could have helped them make a decision that they needed to make. You know, and I think that's kind of the biggest message from that book, is just taking ownership. And the other one is Ego is the Enemy. And this one just really resonated with me because it's something that I'm trying myself to work on constantly, is just have that humility. And I think for a young coach, I think that's maybe one of the biggest lessons to learn, is being okay with, you know, being vulnerable and not having the answer, and being okay with admitting that you don't know. You know, it's okay if you don't know, but then you need to go find out. You need to figure out, okay, I don't know this yet. Where can I go find the answer? And I think a lot of times, especially what I've seen recently with a lot of the different, you know, interns I've had both here at Purdue, as well as with the Bulls, is they're so eager. You know, they want to show everything that they know. And, you know, and a lot of these kids are, I mean, they read like crazy and, you know, they know the science, and but they don't have that experience yet, you know. And so, like, they're so afraid of being wrong and how they might look. And, you know, and so it's almost like I think they do themselves a disservice because they maybe overstep their bounds at times, and they stop learning because they want to show how smart they are. And, well, if I ask a question, then he's going to know that I don't know this. So now that exposes me. Now maybe I'm not as smart. I, in my role, I ask our interns a lot of times more questions that they ask me, because they've been places I haven't been. They've worked for coaches who I've not worked for or I've yet to meet yet. They could have a lot of stuff that I could learn from them. I'll ask them to tell me what they thought went well with our session. What could I have done better? They might have a nugget in there. I think you can learn from anyone.
And I think you highlighted some things, which was going to be the next question, which would be recommendations for young strength and conditioning coaches. So I'm going to throw another question at you. When it came time for you to start looking for internships, what was your thought process behind it? Like, when you're looking for internship opportunities at that time, was it to gain exposure into an area that you thought you wanted to pursue, or was it because you wanted to work with that specific coach? And the reason I ask this is I think, especially when you're young and starting out, you kind of have specific goals, or sometimes you may have no clue what you want to do in terms of S&C. So like, what would be some pointers in terms of like figuring out good internship opportunities for you?
Yeah, for me, the way that I approached it was, I was kind of able to figure out pretty early on that this was something that I thought I might want to do. What I did then was I really looked and tried to find out about people who were in positions that I wanted to one day get to. So looking at, NBA strength coaches, high-level college strength coaches, even people in private industries, stuff like that, and try to look at their path. Where have they been? Who have they learned under? Who were their mentors? And then seeking out those places or those people. I think a big thing is, never be afraid to reach out to anyone. The worst thing that can happen is you don't get a response. But I, and the other thing is, especially starting out, seek out anyone and everyone who knows more than you, which is, at that point, it's pretty much everyone. So, I went to people at my high school. I went to people at the YMCA. I went to people at the COREC at my university. And I think every experience, whether it's shadowing someone, talking to someone on the phone, having a coffee with someone, it builds and adds for the next experience. The other thing that I think really helped me throughout was I looked for diversity within those experiences. And I think even if, if it's a young coach out there and they really are dead set on working in maybe the Premier League or in the NFL or, in one sport, I think it's still really, really important to get experience in other sports as well. Early part of your career, to try and work in the private sector, work with then young athletes, high school athletes, work with college athletes if you can, and work with pro athletes. I've been fortunate. I've worked with athletes at every single level, and I think there's a lot to be learned from other sports, other fields, or other age groups that even, say, for example, I apply to training our basketball players. Just as an example here, 2 years ago, I took over our dive program and I knew absolutely nothing about training divers, and in pouring myself into learning and understanding that sport and those athletes, I actually learned a lot that I was able to apply to my basketball app. But I think it's, you can never have enough different experiences, and again, never be afraid to reach out to people, never stop learning. I think it's, the more, I would say, the more you learn, the less you know, because you realize how little you really know. Where early on, you don't know that much, so you think you know everything. You think you have all the answers, and, I think that's something that I've tried to stay true to for myself, and even in recent years, I've really tried to expand. I've spent a lot more time over in Europe. I got my master's in Australia. I've tried to reach out and look at other sports, other businesses to get better with what I do and finding solutions within what I do.
No, definitely. I think it was a couple months ago that you went to, you went to visit Tom Allen at Aston Villa?
Yes. Yep. Went out and visited Tom Allen at Aston Villa and went to an event called Leaders in Sport, put on by Leaders Performance Institute, that brings together not just sport performance coaches, but head coaches, general managers, medical directors, sport psychologists from all over the world, and just about every different sport. But yeah, no, it's visits like that with a guy like Tom, who, I mean, he's doing some unbelievable work. And for your listeners out there, any of them who haven't listened to your podcast that you did with Tom, you absolutely have to listen to it. But I mean, I spent a day just watching him in action and asking questions. And I mean, there was so much that he's doing with Aston Villa that I can apply and bring back to what we do at Purdue with our basketball guys. But I think a lot of times that's what you find is when you get stuck with a problem within your area of expertise or your sport or, you know, your skill set, whatever it is, oftentimes the solution has already been, you know, is already there, but it may exist in another area. So the more you get outside of your own box, I think the more creatively you start to think and the better equipped you are to have solutions for just about any scenario.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you discussed that about thinking outside the box, because I brought up two things. The first is extreme ownership, which is the book that you brought up, that on the face of it, I think a lot of strength coaches probably wouldn't pick it up, since they would see Navy SEALs and think that has to do with the military and be like, well, what can I learn from this? And then the other thing it made me think of is Tom Allen, who he was when he was trying to figure out his how to go about doing the injury risk profile, reach out to one of his friends who was an economist and knew nothing about sports science, but ended up learning from that and figuring out the solution.
Yeah. And that's one of the things Tom was telling me when I was out there was he said the best conference he's ever been to where he took away the most was actually a finance conference. So I told him that's my next step is that I want to check out one of those conferences.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I mentioned it in the podcast as well. So, Josh, since we were previously on the topic of reaching out to people, if anybody listening to this podcast has any questions for you, what's the best way they can reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can check me out on Twitter or Instagram. Follow me, send me a message on there. For both of them, it's at Jay Bonacall. Otherwise, just shoot me an email, jbonacall@purdue.edu. You know, I try and do the best I can to respond to every message and email that I get. Sometimes, you know how it is over the course of the season, you get caught up. But if I don't get back to someone right away, just follow up with me and I'll do my best to respond, because, you know, it was other coaches who were very successful, who did that for me and paved the way. So I try and do the best I can to do the same and pay it forward.
Josh, do you have any upcoming presentations that you're going to be doing at any conferences?
So I will be presenting, I believe it's May 24th. I got to check on the date, in Las Vegas at the High Performance Basketball Symposium. So I'll be out there in May. But I'll probably put a post up of that pretty soon.
Fantastic. So, Josh, if you send me over that, I'll make sure to link it in the show notes where you're going to be presenting. I'm also going to be linking your email and Twitter account so people can have easy access to reach out to you, along with the books that you recommended.
Awesome.
So, Josh, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast this evening, taking the time to share a bit of your knowledge and share a bit about how you have gone about creating this player-centric culture at Purdue University.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care, Josh.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Historic Performance Podcast. As I mentioned in the first episode of 2017, I would greatly appreciate it if many of you took the time to either write a review or rating on iTunes. It really helps other coaches discover the show and get some great information out there. So thank you in advance. I'll see you guys next week.